The reading audio for Odyssey, Books 1, 2, and 4, excerpts. Part 2, continuing in Book 4. When the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, Menelaus rose and dressed himself. He bound his sandals on his comely feet, girded his sword about his shoulders, and left his room looking like an immortal god. Then, taking a seat near Telemachus, he said, "And what, Telemachus, has led you to take this long sea voyage to Lacedaemon? Are you on public or private business? Tell me all about it." "I have come, sir," replied Telemachus, "to see if you can tell me anything about my father. I am being eaten out of house and home. My fair estate is being wasted, and my house is full of miscreants who keep killing great numbers of my sheep and oxen on the pretense of paying their addresses to my mother. Therefore, I am a suppliant at your knees. If you may tell me about my father's end, whether you saw it with your own eyes or heard it from some other traveler, for he was a man born to trouble. Do not soften things out of any pity for myself, but tell me in all plainness exactly what you saw. If my brave father Odysseus ever did you loyal service, either by word or deed, when you Achaeans were harassed by the Trojans, bear it in mind now and tell me truly." Menelaus, on hearing this, was very much shocked. "So," he exclaimed, "these cowards would usurp a brave man's bed. A hind might as well lay her newborn young in the lair of a lion, and then go off to feed in the forest or in some grassy dell. The lion, when he comes back to his lair, will make short work with the pair of them, and so will Odysseus with these suitors. By Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, if Odysseus is still the man that he was when he wrestled with Philomelaides in Lesbos, and threw him so heavily that all the Achaeans cheered him, if he is still such, and were to come near these suitors, they would have a short shrift and a sorry wedding. As regards your questions, however, I will not deceive you, but tell you, without concealment, all that the old man of the sea told me. I was trying to come on here, but the gods detained me in Egypt, for my hecatombs had not given them full satisfaction, and the gods are very strict about having their dues. Now off Egypt, about as far as a ship can sail in a day with a good stiff breeze behind her, there is an island called Pharos. It has a good harbor from which vessels can get out into open sea when they have taken in water. And there the gods becalmed me 20 days without so much as a breath of fair wind to help me forward. We should have run clean out of provisions, and my men would have starved if a goddess had not taken pity upon me and saved me. It was Idothea, daughter of Proteus, the old man of the sea, for she had taken a great fancy to me. She came to me one day when I was by myself, as I often was, for the men used to go with their barbed hooks all over the island in the hope of catching fish, a fish or two, to save them from the pangs of hunger. "Stranger," said she, "it seems to me that you like starving in this way. At any rate, it does not greatly trouble you, for you stick here day after day, without even trying to get away, though your men are dying by inches." "Let me tell you," said I, "whichever of the goddesses you may happen to be, that I am not staying here of my own accord, but must have offended the gods that live in heaven. Tell me, therefore, for the gods know everything, which of the immortals it is that is hindering me in this way, and tell me also how I may sail the sea so as to reach my home." "Stranger," replied she, "I will make it all quite clear to you. There is an old immortal who lives under the sea hereabouts, and whose name is Proteus. He is an Egyptian, and people say he is my father. He is Poseidon's head man, and knows every inch of ground all over the bottom of the sea. If you can snare him and hold him tight, he will tell you about your voyage, what courses you are to take, and how you are to sail the sea so as to reach your home. He will also tell you, if you so will, all that has been going on at your house, both good and bad, while you have been away on your long and dangerous journey. Can you show me, said I, some trap, by means of which I may catch this old god without his suspecting me and finding me out? For a god is not easily caught, not by a mortal man. Stranger, said she, I will make it all quite clear to you. About the time when the sun shall have reached midheaven, the old man of the sea comes up from under the waves, heralded by the west wind that furs the water over his head. As soon as he has come up, he lies down and goes to sleep in a great sea cave, where the seals, Halosydne's chickens, as they call them, come up also from the grey sea and go to sleep in shoals all around them. And a very strong and fish-like smell do they bring with them. Early tomorrow morning I will take you to this place and will lay you in ambush. Pick out, therefore, the three best men you have in your fleet, and I will tell you all the tricks that the old man will play. First he will look over all his seals and count them. Then, when he has seen them and tallied them on his five fingers, he will go to sleep among them, as a shepherd among his sheep. The moment you see that he is asleep, seize him. Put forth all your strength and hold him fast, for he will do his very utmost to get away from you. He will turn himself into every kind of creature that goes upon the earth, and will become also both fire and water. But you must hold him fast and grip him tighter and tighter, till he begins to talk to you and comes back to what he was when you saw him go to sleep. Only then may you may slacken your hold and let him go. And you can ask him which of the gods it is that is angry with you, and what you must do to reach your home over the seas. Having so said, she dived under the waves, whereon I turned back to the place where my ships were ranged upon the shore, and my heart was clouded with care as I went along. When I reached my ship, we got supper ready, for night was falling, and camped down upon the beach. When the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, I took the three men, on whose prowess of all kinds I could most rely, and went along by the seaside, praying heartily to heaven. Meanwhile, the goddess fetched me up four seal-skins from the bottom of the sea, all of them just skinned, for she meant playing a trick upon her father. Then she dug four pits for us to lie in, and sat down to wait till we should come up. When we were close to her, she made us lie down in the pits, one after the other, and threw a seal-skin over each of us. Our weight would have been intolerable, for the stench of the seals was most distressing. But here, too, the goddess helped us, for she put some ambrosia under each man's nostrils, which was so fragrant that it killed the smell of the seals. We waited the whole morning and made the best of it, watching the seals come up in hundreds to bask upon the seashore, till at noon the old man of the sea came up too. And when he had found his fat seals, he went over them, counted them. We were among the first he counted, and he never suspected any guile, but laid himself down to sleep as soon as he had done counting. Then we rushed upon him with a shout and seized him, at which he began at once with his old tricks, and changed himself first into a lion with a great mane. Then, all of a sudden, he became a dragon, a leopard, a wild boar. The next moment he was running water, then again directly he was a tree. But we stuck to him, and never lost hold, till at last the cunning old creature became distressed, and said, "Which of the gods was it, son of Atreus, that hatched this plot with you for snaring me, and seizing me against my will? What do you want?" "You know yourself, old man," I answered. "You will gain nothing by trying to put me off. It is because I have been kept so long in this island, and see no sign of my being able to get away. I am losing all heart. Tell me, then, for you gods know everything, which of the immortals it is that is hindering me. And tell me also how I may sail the sea so as to reach my home. Then, he said, if you finish your voyage and get home quickly, you must offer sacrifices to Zeus and to the rest of the gods before embarking, for it is decreed that you shall not get back to your friends and to your own house till you have returned to the heaven-fed stream of Egypt and offered holy hecatombs to the immortal gods that reign in heaven. When you have done this, they will let you finish your voyage. I was broken-hearted when I heard that I must go back all that long and terrible voyage to Egypt. Nevertheless, I answered, I will do all, old man, that you have laid upon me. But now tell me, and tell me true, whether all the Achaeans whom Nestor and I left behind us when we set sail from Troy have got home safely, or whether any one of them came to a bad end either on board his own ship or among his friends when the days of his fighting were done. Son of Atreus, he answered, why ask me? You had better not know what I can tell you, for your eyes will surely fill when you have heard my story. Many of those about whom you ask are dead and gone, but many still remain, and only two of the chief men among the Achaeans perished during their return home. As for what happened on the field of battle, you were there yourself. A third Achaean leader is still at sea, alive, but hindered from returning. Ajax was wrecked, for Poseidon drove him onto the great rocks of Gyrae. Nevertheless, he let him get safe out of the water. Then, in spite of all Athena's hatred, he would have escaped death if he had not ruined himself by boasting. He said the gods could not drown him, even though they had tried to do so. When Poseidon heard this large talk, he seized his trident in his two brawny hands and split the rock of Gyrae in two pieces. The base remained where it was, but the part on which Ajax was sitting fell headlong into the sea and carried Ajax with it. So he drank salt water and was drowned. Excuse me. Your brother and his ships escaped, for Hera protected him. But when he was just about to reach the high promontory of Malea, he was caught by a heavy gale, which carried him out to sea again. This drove him to the foreland, where Thyestes used to dwell, but where Aegisthus was then living. By and by, however, it seemed as though he was to return safely after all, for the gods backed the wind into its old quarter, and they reached home. Agamemnon kissed his native soil and shed tears of joy at finding himself in his own country. Now, there was a watchman whom Aegisthus kept always on the watch, and to whom he had promised 2 talents of gold. This man had been looking out for a whole year to make sure that Agamemnon did not give him the slip and prepare war. When, therefore, this man saw Agamemnon go by, he went and told Aegisthus, who at once began to lay a plot for him. He picked 20 of his bravest warriors and placed them in ambush on one side of the courtyard, while on the opposite side he prepared a banquet. Then he sent his chariots and horsemen to Agamemnon and invited him to the feast. He got Agamemnon there, also unsuspicious of the doom that was waiting him, and killed him when the banquet was over, as though he were butchering an ox in the shambles. Not one of Agamemnon's or Aegisthus' followers were left alive. They were all killed there in the cloisters. Thus spoke Proteus, and I was broken-hearted as I heard him. I sat down upon the sands and wept. I felt as though I could no longer bear to live or look upon the light of the sun. Presently, when I had had my fill of weeping and writhing upon the ground, the old man of the sea said, Son of Atreus, do not waste any more time in crying so bitterly. It can do no manner of good. Find your way home as fast as ever you can, for Aegisthus is still alive, and even though Orestes has already succeeded in killing him, you may yet come in for his funeral. On this I took comfort in spite of all my sorrow, and said, I know now about Ajax and Agamemnon. Tell me, therefore, about the third man of whom you spoke. Is he alive, but at sea, unable to get home, or is he dead? Tell me, no matter how much it may grieve me. The third man, he answered, is Odysseus, who dwells in Ithaca. I can see him on an island, sorrowing bitterly in the house of the nymph, Calypso, who is keeping him prisoner. And he cannot reach his home, for he has neither ships nor sailors to take him over the sea. As for your own end, Menelaus, you shall not die in Argos, but the gods will take you to the Elysian plain, which is at the ends of the world, and there fair-haired Rhadamanthus reigns. And men lead an easier life than anywhere else in the world, for in Elysium there falls not rain nor hail nor snow, but Oceanus breathes ever with a west wind that sings softly from the sea and gives fresh life to all men. This will happen to you because you have married Helen and are Zeus's son-in-law. As he spoke, he dived under the waves, whereon I turned back to the ships with my companions, and my heart was clouded with care as I went along. When we reached the ships, we got supper ready, for night was falling, and camped down upon the beach. When the child of morning, rosy-fingered dawn, appeared, we drew our ships into the water, put our masts and sails within them. Then we went on board ourselves, took up our seats on the benches, and smote the gray sea with our oars. I again stationed my ships in the heaven-fed stream of Egypt, and offered hecatombs that were full and sufficient. When I had thus appeased heaven's anger, I raised a barrow to the memory of Agamemnon, that his name might live forever, after which I had a quick passage home, for the gods sent me a fair wind. Excuse me. And now for yourself, Telemachus, stay here some 10 or 12 days longer, and I will then speed you on your way. I will make you a noble present of a chariot and 3 horses. I will also give you a beautiful chalice that so long as you live you may think of me whenever you make a drink offering to the immortal gods. Son of Atreus, replied Telemachus, do not press me to stay longer. I should be contented to remain with you for another 12 months, for I find your conversation so delightful that I should never once wish myself at home with my parents. But my crew, whom I have left at Pylos, are already impatient, and you are detaining me from them. As for any present you may be disposed to make me, I had rather that it should be a piece of plate. I will take no horses back with me to Ithaca, but will leave them to adorn your own stables, for you have much flat ground in your kingdom, where lotus thrives, as also meadow sweet and wheat and barley, and oats with their white and spreading ears. In Ithaca we have neither open fields nor racecourses, and the country is more fit for goats than horses. Pardon me. I like it better for that. None of our islands have much level ground suitable for horses, and Ithaca least of all. Menelaus smiled and took Telemachus' hand within his own. What you say, said he, shows that you come of good family. I both can and will make this exchange for you, by giving you the finest and most precious piece of plate in all my house. It is a mixing bowl by Hephaestus' own hand, of pure silver except the rim, which is inlaid with gold. Phaedimus, king of the Sidonians, gave it me in the course of a visit, which I paid him when I returned thither on my homeward journey. I will make you a present of it. Thus did they converse. Meanwhile, guests kept coming to the king's house. They brought sheep and wine, as well as bread that their wives had put for them. Thus they were busy cooking their dinners in the courts. Telemachus proceeds homeward after this. It's only in Book 5 that the action shifts to Odysseus, still trapped on Calypso's island. Hermes is dispatched with the news that Odysseus must be released, and his adventures then continue after that.